WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We are experiencing an explosion of interest in food, not just interest in eating it, but watching others prepare foods that we will probably never eat. Much of this is due to television, which is now dishing up hour upon hour of programming based on food and those who make it. Perhaps it started with Julia Child on PBS, but now, like an overfed waistline, food shows are spreading across networks and cable channels in an attempt to satisfy a growing and seemingly insatiable appetite for all things food. Unknowns are pitted against each other in reality cooking shows. Well-known slave-driving chefs berate wannabes, all while up-and-coming chefs are coming up with recipes and showing them off in so many TV kitchens that there may actually be more people cooking on television than in homes across America. Food is big business for TV and big entertainment, and all these shows are creating stars. And today we meet two of them. Rick Brown is the creator, host, and executive producer of public television's popular Barbecue America series. It's a kind of cooking and travelogue series highlighting the nation's outdoor culinary landscape. It's now in its seventh season, if I did the math right. He is also has also hosted the Outdoor Channel's cooking and travel show Ready, Aim, Grill. Rick Brown, welcome back. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
You were on David Venable's show once, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I did his show last year. He and I were selling cedar planks. And I was talking to someone earlier how the production value at QVC when you're selling a food product or anything related to food is astounding. I mean, it makes something like the Today Show look like amateurs. They have a huge kitchen in the back. They have a 8-foot-long table filled with various foods that are done on or around cedar planks. It was pretty amazing, and they have a slick operation there.
Wow. And joining us by phone in advance of his appearance later this week is David Venable. He's on QVC, as we mentioned. Perhaps you didn't know that they cooked on that channel. I actually did not know that until Friday. Well, they do, and he is their resident foodie with a passion for all things food, from gadgets and cookware to cookbooks and what can be done with them all. His was the first show that legendary cook Paula Deen ever appeared on, and she wrote the foreword to his book, In the Kitchen with David, Comfort Foods That Take You Home. He joins us by phone from Philadelphia. Welcome.
Good morning. It's nice to be with you.
How do you explain this vast kitchen at QVC? Because you do other things besides food up there.
We do indeed. It's a phenomenal setup in suburban Philadelphia. QVC has been on the air now a little over 26 years. So it's been an amazing time for us to really explore products of all kinds. But our cooking and dining programs and our cooking and dining business is, as you mentioned, a big part of what we do. And we have quite a setup there. And Rick, it's nice to hear you again and nice to be with you again.
Nice seeing you again, David.
And of course, sitting here very quietly is our own resident chef who is salivating at the thought of going to QVC and using those kitchens and jealous that he didn't go take that trek in life as opposed to being our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales University. Peter Reinhardt is back. Welcome back.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, it's good to be back. And I'm thinking, now how do I get my own show?
You had your own show for a while, didn't you?
Well, we've been working on
one. I saw some footage of a pizza show that you have been shooting.
And it's actually on the web, on a web network. But, you know, I mean, listening to these guys here trying to get some ideas.
But, you know, I saw that show. That pizza show that you're shooting for the web is really a great show. And you're going to different pizza places and finding out what their secrets are and how they've been successful and why they do what they do, which is different in some cases from what the other guy you did last week did. Explain that to me. Why do we care? Just take me to a pizza place and let me eat.
Yeah, well, we call the show Pizza Quest, and I think the operable word is quest, and I think that's what these guys are tapping into, is that there is this hunger that goes beyond just the food itself,
yeah,
that food triggers for us. And it leads to sort of this questing, the best of, why is this one better than that one? How can I get my hands on the best version of something?
But I understand talking about this among friends. Oh, I went to this place last night, or I'm going tonight to go see. And you talk about it in anticipation, or you're giving your own amateur review of what you experienced. But on television, we can neither smell nor taste what's being prepared. We have to take your guy's word for it, that it's what you're doing is actually up to snuff. What is driving? I want to hear from the two of you, Rick and Dave. What is driving, you think, viewer interest in all these TV food shows? I'll start with you because you're in the studio, Rick.
Well, I think it's an armchair culinary tour of either the local area or America. The last 2 years of Barbecue America, I've been in Europe. I've been in 26 countries. What you're doing, there's such an interest in food, and there's becoming a much more sophisticated audience out there about food, not just how to cook a hamburger, but how to cook a Kobe burger, or how to stuff it with an exotic cheese or another exotic ingredient. People are hungry for quality, and they've been shown through various TV shows that, you know, the backyard cooker can do just as well as a four-star chef if he puts his mind and his passion in a certain direction. So they all want to – they all – everybody wants to kind of be a chef.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one way of getting them there, is seeing ordinary folks like me. I mean, I'm just a guy that likes to cook and obviously likes to eat. There's a lot of people that like to eat. And again, America is becoming much more sophisticated in what they're doing. I mean – a lot of what David and QVC sells are upscale items or items that make you do something a little better or a little easier. And I think that's a big part of it.
Do you have any idea, David, because you not only talk about food and demonstrate recipes and cooking things, but you also sell stuff that allow people in the kitchen to cook better or quicker, more quickly or more efficiently, or try new ways of cooking. Do you know, after they buy these products, do they actually use them? Do you ever hear from viewers?
We do indeed, in big numbers, because the advent of social media really allows us to hear from these customers in real time. And we also invite customer reviews on our website, so it's a great opportunity for them to give us immediate feedback on what they think of the products. And they're using them and really elevating what they're doing in the kitchen. So many of the gadgets that we offer on QVC are time savers. They are gadgets that will help you, you know, kind of take shortcuts and be able to achieve great results in less time. Also, just some really unusual gadgets that help you get the job done in a way that is much easier. So we're finding that they're really loving what they're buying. They're doing a lot more cooking, and certainly in this autumn season of the year, when we turn the barbecue grill off and we rediscover the stove, they're really beginning to cook in big numbers.
There's so many of these shows on television. Is there a specific ingredient or set of ingredients that need to be in these shows? What must these shows do have?
First, David, I've been doing barbecue for 10 years. We don't turn off the barbecue in the fall.
Depends on where you live, I think.
I have friends in Connecticut who barbecue in the snow. But anyway, more to your question, Michael. Passion. And a legitimate passion for what you're doing and what you're tasting and what you're seeing and the people you're meeting. And if the host doesn't have it, the guests have to have it. My show, Barbecue America, we travel all over the United States, all over the world. My show was not about me. It was about the people making the barbecue, doing the grilling, doing the smoking, and their passion for it.
I'm just curious. You said you spent last year in Europe, or a good part of it in Europe, doing Barbecue America. Are you teaching them how to barbecue, or are you taking secrets from them?
No. My whole goal on that was to show, we're pretty we have egos here in this country. We think that we invented just about everything,
yeah,
including barbecue. And I got news for you. We're actually third in the world in number of barbecuing. First is South Africa. Next is Australia, and then the U.S. But I was trying to actually see how other countries did the same thing that we do. And you'd think there wouldn't be much difference. There was a vast amount of difference.
Huh. David, I don't think anybody knows this, but very few people know this, but you were born and raised in Charlotte, weren't you?
I was, indeed. I graduated Independence High School.
So I'm curious if you ever watched the original TV cook in Charlotte, Betty Feaser, on WBTV, or if you ever watched Barbara McKay cook on Top of the Day.
Betty Feaser, I remember very clearly from my childhood, and my grandparents watched that program quite a bit as well. So when I wasn't with my family in Charlotte, and I was visiting grandparents up in Burke County, they were watching Betty Feaser quite a bit. So I'm very, very familiar with that, and really one of the pioneers in cooking on television.
Yes, and do you think, back in the deep, dark recesses of your mind, that that's where the seed was planted for you either to do television or to do what you're doing on television now?
For me, I think it's a number of things. A perfect storm kind of came together for me in terms of a love of performing, and my original job in television before QVC was television news. So I had a great interest in performing and television and journalism, and all that kind of gave way 19 years ago to a career at QVC. But my love of food goes way back from the time I was learning to cook in my grandmother's kitchen. Certainly all these little things are ingredients in my larger recipe in terms of how I ended up cooking on television. But one of your panelists said earlier, it's all about passion. I've had a passion for great food since I was a child, and I think for anyone who really loves to cook, they come to it with a great passion for great food. And regardless of what level of experience you have with cooking, I think if you come to it with a love of great food, that leads the way to you becoming a better cook.
That's David Venable. We're talking about food as entertainment, food on television on Charlotte Talks today on WFAE. Peter.
David, I had a question for you. You mentioned earlier about the feedback you get from your viewers for these products. And I think as somebody who sometimes watches these shows and wonders, doesn't necessarily buy what you're selling, but was watching the show wondering about those products, and it's partly with the infomercial generation and all that, we're somewhat skeptical sometimes when we see something on television being promoted on a large scale. So I guess my question really is are you really getting great feedback? Do people love these tools? And just between us, among friends here, are they really working for the viewers? Or do you get feedback saying, I feel like it was a little overhyped?
So before you answer that question, let me tell you with all honesty, David, at this moment in time, no one's listening. So you can say whatever you want.
That's reassuring. We get very candid feedback from our customers, and I've long believed the old saying that don't ask anyone what they think if you don't want to hear what they have to say.
Right.
And at QVC, we're very, very interested in all feedback on product, good, bad, and indifferent. So it's one of those things where the overwhelming majority of folks that purchase on QVC find that the products are working just as they were intended and as they were demonstrated. On occasion, you'll have some folks that that had different expectations for that product, but we take care of all those customers. So whether they are someone that's been very happy with the product or unhappy with the result, we take care of them. But I find that overall, because of our quality standards at QVC and given that they're so high, that we have fewer numbers of negative comments and we have much more of a positive experience. One of the nice things about buying a product after you've watched it on QVC, different from buying it in a store, is that you're able to see a live demonstration. And I think we're able to really help manage expectations for the customer. There will always be that stereotype that selling anything on television is accompanied by hype and high pressure, and QVC really doesn't like to work in that way. We liken the whole experience to talking with a neighbor over the backyard fence. And so I think when you establish trust with the customer, when you have a long-standing relationship with them, and that includes QVC as a company and me as a host, I think that that trust and that bond begins to build, and they are very comfortable and confident with what they purchase. And when they're unhappy, we take care of them. But for the most part, they seem to be very positive.
And Rick, you are from Canada, and you spent the last 10 years doing Barbecue America. Those of us in North Carolina would just like to know, sir, what does somebody from Canada know about barbecue?
Well, 2 years ago, Canadians won the Jack Daniel's World Invitational Barbecue Contest. Uh-huh. I take a great pride in my Canadian. I know we don't just barbecue rodents that eat trees. Or huskies, or whale blubber.
Or mounties.
Right. And we have cars. We don't have dog sleds. When I began Barbecue America a number of years ago, there were like maybe 500 contests in the U.S. Today there are thousands. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of them in Canada.
And good, I would think good barbecue.
Good barbecue,
or you wouldn't have brought it up. All right, we're coming back, in just a moment. But right now, we are about to take a break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Audi of Charlotte on Independence Boulevard in Matthews, inside the 485 Beltway, and online at audioofcharlotte.com. Directions and inventory available at audiofcharlotte.com. And from Belk College of Business at UNC Charlotte, part-time MBA and graduate programs in accounting, economics, math, finance, and real estate. Information at belkcollege.uncc.edu/connect. I'm Erin Kiever. We're coming back to more Charlotte Talks in just a moment. And on the show tomorrow, for hundreds of years, there have been stories of treasure hidden somewhere in North Carolina, a treasure allegedly hidden by the infamous Blackbeard the Pirate. Now historian and author Kevin Duffus says he believes he's found it, but not in the form of the riches you might imagine. Duffus joins us tomorrow to paint a detailed picture of Blackbeard, and we'll get a glimpse into a pirate's life. That's Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, retailers look forward to the holiday shopping season for at least one-fifth of their annual sales. How online shopping, a backlash against Black Friday, and economic uncertainty are changing buying trends.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 until noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on 90.7 WFAE. Listener-supported public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about food as entertainment, specifically food on TV with Rick Brown, creator, host, and executive producer of PBS Television's Barbecue America, David Venable, host and author. He's the host of you're a host on QVC. Is there a name for your segment, David? I don't even know the answer to that question.
This show is called In the Kitchen with David.
Okay, and hence the name of the book, In the Kitchen with David, Comfort Foods That Take You Home, with a foreword by Paula Dean. David was the first person to have Paula on television. And Peter Reinhardt is here, Johnson Wales chef on assignment. I want to talk about vetting for television because you do a lot of recipes. You go around the country, you go around the world now, Rick, looking at barbecue recipes and barbecuers and utensils and grills and things like that. How much goes into, before you actually do the show, finding out what these guests you're going to do are going to cook and whether it's any good?
It's mostly done on the spot. When we arrive at a barbecue festival, say, Jack Daniels is a good example, in Lynchburg, Tennessee, the first day we're walking around talking to people, and I've been in this business for enough years so that you pretty much know when you start talking to somebody, A, if they make a good on-air guest. You see what they're cooking. You see how they're cooking. You see how their team works, and you pretty much know what's going on, that it's going to be that they know what they're doing. Plus, events like Jack Daniels or some of these barbecue contests. I just did the Time Warner Cable Barbecue and Blues this weekend. I was not only a judge, but I was the MC handing out the awards. Mm-hmm. That these are the cream of the crop. And even the backyarders, or what they call this year at this contest, the challengers, passion is number one, and they're putting a lot of passion into it. You and I, or even restaurants, if they're cooking Cornish game hens, they're cooking 100 of them. These guys are cooking 4, and they put tender, loving care into it. Not only do they want the money, but they also want the recognition, and it's a pride thing, and they want to cook something that make the judges go, wow. So, again, it comes back to what I said before, that passion. When you're talking to somebody, you say, this guy's going to make a good guest. He's passionate about what he's doing. He's knowledgeable. He knows why he's doing this. He knows what the results are going to be, and usually he gets those results.
In the last segment, you talked about being on David's show and selling these cedar planks that people sometimes cook on. And David, that's just one of the products that you have dealt with. I bet you can't even count the number of products that you've dealt with on QVC, food or otherwise. But how do you vet all of this stuff? How do you know that what you're selling to people at home is worth the money and worth putting on your show? And or is that even a consideration? If I come to you with a product that I made for 5 cents in China, I'm selling it for $35, and there's money to be made, does it matter that it's good or bad?
Well, quality is always the very first and most important ingredient in any product we put on the air at QVC, and we have a tremendous team of merchants that work with new vendors, with manufacturers, always looking for new and innovative products to bring to QVC. We're also doing lots of research on those products as well. We're looking to see how they're performing in the marketplace. If it's a new item, we want to know all about it. Then it's put through our rigorous quality assurance at QVC. So it's a situation where it goes through many, many steps of vetting. And and also discussion and research before we ever bring it to the air. We want to make sure that everything we bring to our customer on QVC is something that we would feel very comfortable having in our own home, and so therefore the standards become very, very high.
How did it work from your point of view when you brought the cedar planks to QVC? How did that work for you as a vendor coming there?
Well, I don't think we did as well as we had hoped. We were told ahead of time by QVC, they're very good about this. They said, well, there's not been a lot of success in the past with these cedar planks because it's a certain niche of cooking that a lot of people don't know about or don't do. But we said, okay, well, we understand that. We want to do it. We came out with some great recipes. The kitchen staff there was amazing. David was amazing. I mean, this man could not only sell ice cubes in Alaska, but he could sell them in the winter. He's really, really good at what he does. And we did well. We sold, I think, 600 or 700 planks in 3-5 minutes, something like that.
I have to stop because saying you could sell ice cubes in Alaska in the winter is a compliment, but it could be a left-handed compliment. I mean, do you actually believe in what you're selling, or do you have to believe in what you're selling on these food shows, whether you're actually selling it for people calling in with their credit cards or whether you're just selling it to fill the airtime?
I think you, and I'm sure David will say the same thing, you have to believe it. It has to be right. I'm not going to promote. Let's say I'm in a restaurant somewhere promoting a restaurant that their barbecue. I'm not going to say it's great stuff, that this is fantastic, their brisket is the best I've ever had, anything like that, unless it really is, because my reputation is on the line. And if my reputation suffers, then I lose my credibility. And I'm sure David will say the same thing.
And David, are you part of the vetting process yourself? Do you get to make the call whether a product makes it to the air?
I don't always have that final say-so with a product. Many times I'm asked my opinion, and as I have hosted this program now for so many years, our merchants are very interested because they know that I have my finger on the pulse of what our customers are talking about because I'm on the front lines. So, and to Rick's point about, you know, your reputation, all those things go hand in hand. So I'm able to give very candid feedback when I have an opportunity to give some opinions about what we're thinking about bringing in. Many times I test the products in my own home, in my own kitchen, making sure that I can come at this from a very personal standpoint. You know, a lot of people think that what we do on the air at QVC is the sum total of our job, when in fact there is so much more that's going into it in our off-air time as well, doing product research and learning more about the products and actually testing them at home. So it's one of those situations where I have to very definitely believe in it if I'm going to tell you that I like it.
How many units of a product do you have to sell in order for it to be considered a successful segment?
Well, that really depends on how we bought the item, how much quantity we brought in. There are certain benchmarks and expectations for what we consider a successful product, and it varies with time of day and viewership. So that would be a hard question to answer in very simple terms.
But some success stories, maybe.
And benchmarks that we follow that we consider a successful item, and whether or not we would bring it back or place a reorder.
So, like what were some of the ones that are like astounding, like that would surprise even us to hear how many units you could move of some of your most famous products?
Well, my goodness, it's not unusual for us to sell 20 or 25,000 Vitamix food blenders in a day.
Wow,
that has happened.
I have a Vitamix. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, did you buy it? We're dealing with brands that folks are familiar with. We're dealing with brands that are not unheard of. So I think that more and more people are coming to QVC for those big names like Cuisinart and KitchenAid and Vitamix, Keurig coffee makers. It won't be. It is never an unusual thing to see us go through maybe, good grief, 7,000-8,000 Keurig coffee makers in a 14 or 15 minute presentation.
Wow!
Wow!
Yeah, that's big numbers.
And by the way, when I said the ice cubes to Alaskans in the winter, they're the best ice cubes you could ever taste.
They're the coldest ones you've ever experienced.
David has personally put them in a cocktail and tested them.
They'll never melt. All right. And if you call now, what do you hear from viewers about what they want to see? And I know, David, you're kind of in an interesting situation because you're actually selling products, and a lot of these shows aren't selling products. They're just showing you how to prepare foods, etc. But what are you hearing? What are viewers particularly interested in from both your points of view here?
You go ahead first, David. I took the last one.
Well, no worries. I mean, we're hearing from our customers and what I call our foodies on In the Kitchen with David. They're wanting things that are going to be the better mousetrap. They're looking for things that are going to make life a little easier in the kitchen. They want the great cookware that is going to perform and be easy to clean and be nonstick. They're looking for great bakeware. They're looking for stoneware baking dishes for all the great things they'll do for the holiday season. They're always anxious to find things that are going to make life better, make the recipes better, and also help them introduce new foods into their repertoire. I think so many times we fall into habits and routines with the way we cook. And so we're always offering things on QVC, in my opinion, that will encourage the cook to reach a little further, try a new recipe. We have a segment every week on In the Kitchen with David called Cookbook Corner. We present a new and different cookbook each and every show, and it's an opportunity for them to have a different take on cooking. We try to choose books that we think are in line with their skill level and their experience in the kitchen, but also some things that will hopefully challenge and inspire them to reach a little further. I always tell our foodies to elevate your cooking one recipe at a time, one element at a time. Try that same recipe you've always done, but add a little kick. Try a different ingredient. Do something that's going to change it up a bit, and then experiment a bit in the kitchen.
Before I get Rick's answer to that question, I want to hear from Peter Reinhardt, our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales.
And his new cookbook.
Well, about what people should be looking for. In other words, he just went through a whole list of things that people want, no-stick cookware, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What should they be wanting, aside, of course, from the joy of gluten-free, sugar-free baking, your new cookbook, which will hopefully, in your opinion, be on QVC shortly.
Yeah, Dave, take a look at it. Let me know if I can get into your cookbook corner. But I agree with it. I think that the tools that he's talking about are, and it brought up for me what we started this segment with, which is food as entertainment, not just, you know, the practical side of tools, because I think people watch these shows, and you must discuss this with your staff and have a philosophy at QVC. How much of the show is about entertainment, and how much of it is about selling, and how do you, you know, how do those two go together? Because I agree with all the lists that he gave. Those are the tools that everybody does want.
Okay. All right. David?
I'm terribly sorry. I didn't hear the question.
The question is, you know, do you guys talk about that relationship between the entertainment aspect of your show and the selling of the product, and how do you see those working hand in hand?
Well, I think they very definitely go hand in hand. Like anything else that you enjoy watching on television, there's got to be an entertainment factor. There's got to be personality to the program. There's got to be an ability to bring everything full circle, welcome everyone in, demonstrate great products, do some cooking, relate to customers where they live and how they cook. And so that's very much a part of our strategy as we're producing In the Kitchen with David. And we want to make sure that it is a great, what I call a great foodie conversation. It's one of those things where we want to invite everybody in. Facebook allows us. We do a live chat during our show, so we have someone monitoring our live chat during Facebook. So our foodies are reacting in real time to what we're doing on the air. They're interjecting their own ideas for what we're doing and how they might change up a recipe that we're presenting on the air, how a particular product has really changed the way they're cooking in their own home. So all this comes full circle and hand in hand in terms of really helping this be not only a cooking program, but something that's entertaining and also something that is a little bit aspirational. It gives them some inspiration to really kind of up their game a bit, and hopefully this product, this cookbook, this cookware is going to help them reach the next level.
So, Rick Brown, I want to hear from you. What are your viewers telling you about what they are interested in, what they want to know, what they want to know more about? And also, given what we just talked about, what do you bring to the program, aside from the knowledge, that makes people want to watch, in your opinion?
Well, it basically goes into two types of viewers. One wants to know how to do their spare ribs better than they've ever done before, mm-hmm. or how this guy in Alabama or Greece or whatever does the spare ribs that are – he's going to be the best in the neighborhood, the best in the family. The other side wants to see things that they've never seen barbecued. They want something unusual. They want it done in an unusual place. They enjoy going to Obidos in Portugal and see how they barbecue there. So there's the two. There's the traveler, and then there's the backyard guy that wants to do it better. And as far as what I bring, I think that I bring that passion that we talked about and an enthusiasm and an interest in really learning from all these people that I meet and see around the world, around the U.S., and taking a little bit of their enthusiasm and their passion and drawing it out. I had a gal once in Boston. This gal is in her 80s, and she She was very reluctant to be interviewed at Cod End, which is a fish thing. We're doing grilled lobster. She was very reluctant. Oh, I don't talk on television and all that. Well, we got her talking, and at the end of it, the cameraman stopped. She says, is that all? I really have some more to say. So I enjoy bringing out people, and you get them talking about something that's in their blood, in their heart, in their passion. The door is open.
You're like the proxy for us. You're us talking to these people, asking the questions we'd like to ask them.
I'm tasting that even better. I get to taste it for you.
Well, that's why we want to be you.
And we have to trust you. We have to trust you that you're actually being upfront with us. Have you ever tasted something on TV that you thought, because of all the vetting, was going to be great, and you put it in your mouth, and it just wasn't? And how do you react to that? Has it ever happened?
Yes, it did.
I think I saw that show.
And it happened. It happened on the Outdoor Channel on Ready Aim Grill. Uh-huh. I made a duck dish, and it was a duck that I wasn't familiar with. And I don't know what he had eaten, but it was god-awful. It came into my mouth, and it immediately left my mouth into the studio, and we cut that bit. Now, I usually tell them to leave my mistakes in because people like mistakes. They kind of have fun with them. But this one, no, we cut it out. But, yeah, it does happen.
My favorite Rick Brown moment was when you had this hot dish, and it was on your barbecue show, and at the very end he tasted it, and his head just about blew off, and he couldn't get the words out as they faded out of the show. He couldn't talk anymore.
We're talking about food as entertainment on television here this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. We have Rick Brown with us from PBS Barbecue America, David Venable, host of In the Kitchen with David on QVC, and Peter Reinhardt, our chef on assignment. I want to hear from the three of you, from Johnson & Wales. I want to hear from the three of you about who you watch on television. Do you watch other people cooking on television, and what are they? What are those shows? David.
I am a huge fan of the Barefoot Contessa on Food Network, Anna Garten.
Yes.
I am I'm intrigued with her calm in the kitchen. And I think that it's one of those things where I just enjoy watching her cook because she has such a love of what she's doing. And she has such a love for a variety of ingredients. I love to watch how she incorporates these ingredients and puts in layers of flavor. I often joke that, you know, the roof could cave in and Ina would be okay. She would just say, and look at the golden raisins. They're lovely and they're a perfect color for these muffins. I just love the way she cooks. And she inspires me to find that calm and that joyful place in the kitchen.
Rick.
I love Martin Yan on public television. I used to like Guy Fieri, or as he used to be called, Guy Fieri, but there's so many of his shows on. After a while, I just, okay, I've been there. And I love Chopped. And recently, I was selected as one of 16 barbecue grillers from around the state, around the U.S. to be go to Tucson and compete in a championship in Tucson. And while I didn't win the grand championship, I came close and I did a good job and I had a lot of fun. And I really like watching cooking shows. I don't make a habit of it, but I really enjoy it. But I would say Martin Yan is probably my favorite because of his humor.
Peter?
Yeah, I agree. Martin Yan has been around for a long time and he never gets old. He's always great. We have him here in Charlotte often. He speaks to our students and he puts on a great demo and teaches you at the same time.
Do you watch any of those cooking chef competitions?
Yeah,
shows?
I'm a fan of those, actually. My wife and I have a different philosophy. She loves the Barefoot Contessa. I enjoy it. She loves Giada because she feels that on those shows she can get ideas that she can use at home when she's cooking. So she watches for that, whereas I love the competition shows because I feel like I'm always learning sort of what's coming and see people using unusual ingredients, things that I could talk about with my students.
Do you think they're fair? Because some of those competition shows, you have a basket of goodies and you open the basket and there's a piece of asphalt in there, and I mean, and you have to make something out of it. Is it fair?
I don't know if the judging is fair, but I think that it's fair. The idea of a mystery basket, like they do on Chopped, is something we actually do in culinary schools. We give our students a mystery basket, not quite as crazy as theirs, but we have to see what they'll do with it, how they can be creative on the spot.
It's Food as Entertainment with our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales University, Peter Reinhardt, also Rick Brown, creator, host, executive producer of Barbecue America on PBS, and David Venable, host of In the Kitchen with David, the name of this cookbook as well, from QVC. When we come back, we're going to hear from these guys again and from Mo Rocca, of all people. Stay with us.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community Blood Center of the Carolinas. More than 400 blood products are needed daily to treat local cancer, cardiac, organ transplant, and trauma patients. Every drop stays here, saving local lives. cbcc.us. Coming up next at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, retailers look forward to the holiday shopping season for at least one-fifth of their annual sales. We'll look at how online shopping, a backlash against Black Friday, and economic uncertainty are changing buying trends. That's the Diane Rehm Show ahead at 10. And we're coming right back to more discussion about food as entertainment in a moment on Charlotte Talks. Speaking of food, today on our food blog, WFA Eats is cooking up an untraditional Thanksgiving dinner this year. Read about a little-known turkey technique that results in a more evenly cooked bird. And find a recipe for oyster stuffing at WFAEats.org. Celebrate the holidays with WFAE. We'll be at Blumenthal's Belk Theater with the Charlotte Symphony for its Magic of Christmas concert on Friday evening, November 30th. After the concert, we're hosting a dessert reception with the opportunity to meet conductor Albert George Schramm and some of the musicians. Ticket and reception information is available at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're in the kitchen. We're in the studio with Rick Brown, creator, host, executive producer of Barbecue America on PBS. David Venable joins us by phone from Philadelphia, home of QVC, where he is the host of In the Kitchen with David, and also the author of In the Kitchen with David, comfort foods that take you home. And Peter Reinhardt, our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales University. We're going to have some more conversation with these gentlemen in a moment. You know Mo Rocca from his appearances on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and CBS Sunday Morning with Charles Osgood. But he does lots of other things. Last week, we spoke with a book and a documentary on the American election system that he's involved in. But it turns out that he's also involved with food and putting it on TV. Later this month, Mo Rocca will host a 13-episode original series on the Cooking Channel called My Grandmother's Ravioli. So I asked him why he decided to strike out across the country to get recipes from grandmothers and grandfathers.
Well, it's partly guilt abatement. I never learned how to cook. I had an amazing grandmother. She used to make phenomenal ravioli. If I had a time machine, I'd go back in time about 35 years, and I'd show up at her apartment about a half hour early and actually help her instead of showing up right when it was ready, woofing it down, then taking off. I had a terrific grandmother. I was very close to her. I took her to see Yul Brynner in The King and I. It was on his last tour. He was a little shaky, but we did a lot together. But I didn't learn how to cook from her. And now I'm 43. I don't know how to cook, and it's pathetic. So I figured, why not learn from the old master? So yeah. I'm learning from grandmothers and grandfathers.
And why didn't you learn? If you liked your ravioli so much, for instance, why didn't you learn about how to cook it?
Because I'm disorganized. I don't think I'm lazy. I just think I travel a lot, and like many people I know, it takes time to learn, I think. Mm-hmm. It's not so much that it takes focus, because these people I'm learning from love what they do. They don't see it as work, nor did my grandmother. See it as just something that comes naturally.
And they see it as love. I'll bet you.
You know, they really do. I'm more interested in the why than the how. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in why these people do it. And I'm just interested in hanging out with grandparents, non-celebrities, and hearing their stories and hearing about the lives that they've led. I mean, the people that we've cast tend to be people that have big families, have been married for a very long time. And they're the opposite of most people you see on reality TV. So it's a pleasure to learn from them, to hang out from them, and frankly, to get paid while I'm doing it.
Have you found any food out there that compares with your grandmother's food?
You know, kreplach. And I not only learned from Ruth how to make it, but also how to say it. There's a I don't have a hairball. That's Jewish ravioli, as right. Ruth said. And I live in New York, so I've been around kreplach before, and I love eating it. They're dumplings, basically, and she called them Jewish ravioli. So kreplach are to the Old Testament as ravioli is to the New Testament. I'm good with analogies.
Are you becoming a foodie as a result of these travels?
I am somebody who always appreciated and has been able to eat a lot of good food. The word foodie, it's interesting. On Food Network and Cooking Channel, they don't like that word. I'm not sure why. I don't really like it either. It sounds a little precious, but I'm eating well. Let's just say that. And yeah, I learned how to make fried green tomatoes from a 91-year-old man who still goes out hunting, and he's going shooting some elk right now.
Really?
Actually, he's shooting elk in a couple of weeks in Colorado.
Well, that's special.
He's 91, and he lives in the same house he grew up in. He kills most of what he eats.
That is special.
Before he eats it.
Yes. Well, let's hope. Yes. So is this the start of something else, something big, something to follow this? If this turns out well for you, will you find other things to travel the country about?
This show has hit written all over it. It's heartwarming and hilarious. And yes, I should be traveling around the country learning from old people other stuff. I want to learn woodworking. I want to learn how to landscape. I want to – like, you know, no, it's honestly, it's a complete joy and doing this. And I'm a quick study when it comes to some things. I'm a slow learner when it comes to cooking, and thank goodness, because I'm going to have to go through all of America's grandparents before I actually, you know, can cook a decent dinner.
Mo Rocca, who you hear regularly on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You see him on CBS Sunday Morning. His own show, My Grandmother's Ravioli, premieres Wednesday, October 24th at 8:30 on the Cooking Channel.
Mike, can I give one warning, though? I don't want to pretend that this show is for everybody. If you hate grandmothers and hate home-cooked meals, do not watch this show.
There you go. And I must say, those of you who are listening saying, this is going to be a hit, this has hit written all over, he did that tongue-in-cheek. You just couldn't see the tongue firmly planted in his cheek. We're in the studio with Rick Brown. On the phone with us is David Venable. Peter Reinhardt is also with us. To talk about some of the chefs that you guys have worked with on and off television.
Well, there's some great. We talked about Mr. Yan, who is a friend of mine, and actually, I watched him when I was a child. Graham Carr is someone I got to meet.
The Galloping Gourmet.
Galloping Gourmet is just a wonderful man. In fact, he wrote an endorsement for one of my cookbooks, and he started out with, "I don't usually endorse barbecued food, but in this case, I will."
Do you have a recipe, by the way, for Mo Rocca for the elk, for barbecued elk?
No, I don't, but I'll have to get one, especially if it's from a 91-year-old man who's going to field dress it, gut it right there, and probably eat sushi, elk sushi. Oh.
Well, and David, you launched Paula Deen. What was that like?
Yes.
Well, I mean, just a tremendous opportunity to work with her before anyone really knew her outside of Savannah. She brought her very first cookbook to us in 1998. And at that point, she was thriving in her restaurant in Savannah and had written her first book. And to give you an idea of just how long ago this was, she was actually prepping all of her own food that night when we were preparing for the cookbook segment on the air. And that's how I met her, back in the prep kitchen. And she was covered in flour from her head to her elbows, and she was making cheese biscuits.
Did she have hit written all over her at that point? I mean, could you see any star quality, or is it too early in the game?
That I absolutely saw a tremendous potential for this to be something big. You always hope that things are going to hit big, and you never exactly are sure exactly how that will go, but I had a great feeling that she would be very, very successful. I don't think I ever fully realized just how big she would become.
Because of all the butter.
Those situations where it couldn't have happened to a nicer person.
Sorry.
But that's what everyone says about her, is that she's a very nice person.
I have to ask you, you broke her into television, and she's now written the foreword to your new book, David, In the Kitchen with David, Comfort Foods That Take You Home. She is the queen of comfort food, and certainly the queen of Southern cooking, but she's had some health problems, as we all know, recently, because of the ingredients that she puts in some of that food, and I guess because she does a lot of her own eating of her own cooking. Can you have comfort foods that are not saturated with butters and fats and salts?
Well, it's always been my very firm opinion that everything in moderation, including moderation. So the recipes in my book may not be the recipes that you make every single night, but they will be certainly wonderful to have in your library of recipes when nothing else will do at the end of a long and cold and rainy day, and there's nothing like a bowl of creamy tomato soup and a grilled cheese sandwich. So it's one of those situations where, yes, I think that everything should be done in moderation, and you can certainly lighten comfort food dishes and still make them lovely and comforting, but at the same time, make them a bit more healthy by using lower fat ingredients. I think it's all about balance. It's all about portions, and it's all about just being sensible with how you eat.
You say in your book, comfort food isn't limited to the South. Are there similarities in what constitutes comfort foods from region to region here in this country or around the world?
Oh, absolutely. Because I'm sure if I asked every person on the panel today your favorite comfort food, it would probably all be different answers. Because it's the food that you remember. It's the food that reminds you of family. It's the food that you hope to have when you go home again. You know, for me growing up, it was my mother's Sunday beef pot roast. If I were at my grandmother's house, I couldn't do without her homemade chicken and dumplings. But, you know, whether you're in New Orleans and having a shrimp po' boy sandwich, or you're in the Pacific Northwest and having beautiful grilled salmon, or you're in New England and having the best chowder on Cape Cod, everybody has their own definition of comfort food, and it's that food that really makes you feel like you're home and surrounded by the people that you love.
You mentioned chicken, Rick, and I know that a lot of people think of chicken as being comfort food, whether it's in chicken noodle soup or a baked chicken on Sunday night or whatever it may be. And you were the first person to actually put a recipe for beer butt chicken in a cookbook. Is that comfort food?
Yes, but you have
not
to
for the
say,
chicken, though.
Not for the chicken, but you have to say it correctly.
Okay.
It's beer butt chicken, because that's the way it was first described to me. And it is a comfort food because actually the fat is draining out while you're cooking it. So it's actually a comfort food with a little bit of health thrown in just for fun.
I hesitate to ask this question, but in the interest of full disclosure, we must. What is beer butt chicken?
Well, you take a whole chicken, you put a rub on it, and then you take a can of beer or soda or fruit juice, but you can't use diet because they don't do well with the heat.
Right.
And you open it up and you pour about half of it out, and then you take the chicken in one hand, you take the can in the other hand, and you stick the can where the sun don't shine. And the chicken stands vertically on the grill with his two legs and this beer can stuck there as a tripod. It cooked vertically, which drains the fat off. The beer steams the chicken. In 9 years, I've never had to explain this. This is amazing. The beer steams the chicken from the inside while it's cooked from the outside, gets crispy skin, and it is absolutely a comfort.
I've made it many times, and I learned it first from Rick. And I made it for my brother-in-law once, and he loved it so much that he went home and decided he was going to make it, but he didn't really follow the instructions, and he had his grill turned up all the way instead of on a low flame. And so he lowered the lid, came back to the chicken about a half hour later, and it was just a total cinder, you know, but because he had cooked it too hot. But when it's done well, it is a great technique.
The only caution I have to make is please open the beer can.
Oh,
because
gosh,
if not, you get exploded chicken with aluminum croutons.
Does it matter what kind of beer you use?
Cheap is good. In fact, I once used a beer from the East. David may be familiar with it. It's called Old Speckled Hen. I thought that was very appropriate.
Indeed.
In other forms of entertainment, particularly drama, we talk about that there are seven plots, and they just get changed over and over again. You change the characters, you change the setting, but it's the same seven plots over. And this goes back to the ancient Greeks. And it's true, by the way. It's not just something somebody said. Can the same be said of food? Are there just a certain number of ingredient combinations that we can put together to come up with another new recipe for something?
I don't think there's ever been a recipe done for the first time. I just think everybody takes another recipe that they've seen,
heard
of. Well,
somebody did beer butt chicken first.
Well, yeah. I guess you're right. It's like the guy that ate first oyster.
And when they did that, they had one can of beer left over from a lot of six-packs. What are we going to do with it? We can't share this, so we'll just, you know.
Yeah.
Give it to the chicken.
Do that with that. But there's so many ingredients, so many ways. I'm amazed at barbecue contests, for instance. I just judged the barbecue contest here. There were 60 competitors. You don't think there's 60 ways to do chicken wings differently that taste different? There certainly are. So it all depends on what you put into it, your passion, your technique, your cooking technique, your spices. There is a myriad of ways to cook the same thing. I think, Peter, how many ways is there to cook bread?
Well, we teach our students at Johnson & Wales and at every culinary school. It's more about the cooking techniques. When you talk about the seven plots of theater, there's braising, there's frying, there's sautéing, there's grilling, there's deep fat frying, there's pressure cooking. These are the themes that culinarians used in creating their foods. And after that, it is just variations on a theme.
It's food as entertainment today on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
I have a question for David. Just before we go away, we were talking about what a nice person Paula Deen was, and I would love to hear from both you and Rick, without you guys ruining your careers. You know, not everyone could be that nice. Are there chefs you've worked with who you have said to yourself, I would never work with that person again, and are there any stories you could share with us?
Well, I can't say that I've had a bad experience on the air with any of the chefs. I mean, I've hosted some of the biggest names in television chefs. I mean, Chef Gordon Ramsay, Tyler Florence, Nigella Lawson, Rick Bayless.
Rick Brown.
Cora. I've had just about everybody on the air. Probably the one that I was the most apprehensive about was Chef Gordon Ramsay, because all we know about Chef Gordon Ramsay from television is the extreme spirited conversation he tends to have.
The mood swings.
Exactly. And so I think that's the one that I was probably the most anxious about when I met him for the first time. And I was so incredibly thrilled with just the experience that I had with him. He was a complete gentleman, absolutely wonderful about what we were doing on the air, and really very, very different from the persona you see on television and with all the different shows that he hosts and the ones that that are reality-based and whatnot. He was just an absolute gentleman and a wonderful teacher in our kitchen.
Rick?
There is one chef who is in Los Angeles. He's of Eastern European background. His initials are JS, who screams at his help. Mm-hmm. Yells, screams, demeans. And I've seen that in other chefs. If you have to treat your staff like that, to me, you're not a nice person, and I would never want to work with you again. I would never want to be part of your kitchen, because there's no need for that. The really, really good chefs don't need to tell everybody how good they are all right. The time.
Kenneth, by the way, tweets from something we said earlier in the program. There's no such thing as a Kobe burger. Kobe is illegal in the United States, and Kobe is too fatty to make into a good burger. Is that
true? I had a Kobe burger in New York recently. I had a Kobe burger in Portland. So they must be slipping
it
in.
It's not illegal, you can't call it Kobe beef if it's grown in this country.
Well, there's Wagyu beef, which is the American version, and actually the Japanese like it. Some like it better than their own Kobe, but Kobe beef is allowed in this country now.
I had a Wagyu beef hamburger at Harper's.
How'd you like it?
Last week. It was good. It was very good. David Venable is the host and author. He's a host of In the Kitchen with David at QVC, the author of In the Kitchen with David, Comfort Foods That Take You Home. Rick Brown, a creator, host, executive producer of Barbecue America on PBS, and Peter Reinhardt, our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales University. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.